Ron and Anian.
Everybody needs a pickup truck. You don't realize how much you need a pickup truck until you have one. And then all of a sudden, it's like the best thing since sliced bread.
We got some movies, refrigerators. We got some movies, color TV.
The Car Doctor.
Now, the danger in owning a pickup truck is you go to Home Depot. If you went with a small car, there wasn't too much you could buy. You go with a pickup truck, it's like having a big shopping cart and a little shopping cart when you go to the supermarket.
Welcome to the radio home of Ron and Anian, the Car Doctor. Since 1991, this is where car owners the world over turn to for their definitive opinion on automotive repair. If your mechanic's giving you a busy signal, pick up the phone and call in. The garage doors are open.
But I am here to take your calls at 855-560-9900.
And now, here's Ronnie.
So many cars, so many conversations, so little time. Hello and welcome, Ron and Annie, and the Car Doctor at your service. Where do you want to start this week? Do you want to talk about the pink thing? That's what it is. It was a pink Volkswagen thing. Or maybe we should talk about the Chevy Bolt. We know cars are hot, but this one's a little hotter than most. And then again, maybe we should start here because I think this was probably my lead story in my mind as I observed it unfold in the shop this week. Opus IVS is the Cadillac of scan tools in this industry. And what they are doing in terms of leading the industry is it just gives me an oh wow moment every day that I use it, the tool itself. You know, one of the things mechanics need more than anything right now is information. But I think one of the bigger things, and we always say they need information, but they need direction. And even the best of us, you know, will get lost at times because the problem seems a little overwhelming or convoluted or somehow twisted around. And one of the things that I really have come to like about the Opus IVS scan tool and the whole ideology of how they're doing this is it teaches you conformity. You are going to do the same things over and over at the beginning of the diagnosis to gather information, which is just so important, right? What are we working on? What's the problem? Too many times we sit there, and we all do it. We're human. We're trying to get through the problem. What could be wrong? No. What Opus teaches you to do is show us what's right. Show us what's good. Go in, connect to the car, duplicate the problem, check engine light on, yes, verify it, do a quick test, submit the quick test to tech support, and you get to talk to a tech in that arena of that vehicle. It's as I said to someone this morning I was speaking with, it's sort of like you get to go talk to your buddy at the dealership at lunchtime, and you've got that problem vehicle that you just can't quite seem to nail down. But there's something else that Opus is bringing to the table as they help reform the industry and make it better. They're bringing the ability of looking at a car with dealer level. And when I say dealer level, it's the same thing as saying manufacturer level. The same software in a scan tool that every one of the manufacturers of the car you're driving right now has. That's what they do. It's built into the tool. It's on the back end sometimes. But it gives you the ability, and there's one word that comes to mind, confidence. As a technician, you walk up to the car and you have confidence that you can fix that car because you're not going to be stopped by when you get to that part in the repair procedure. Okay, you've got to perform this test using bidirectional control and a scan tool. You know it's there. It's going to be there because it's the manufacturer. And it's just really, it's eye-opening. I think the best part, looking back at it, is the fun part about that job and this job is, and I'm very fortunate, right? Because look at what I get to do every week. I get to fix cars, but I also get to talk to the leaders in the industry, the really smart people that are out there fixing cars and creating programs and leading the industry along the way and helping to keep the cars going. You know, some guys were meant for the microphone. Some guys were meant to do it off air, as I like to think. I spoke to Matt this week. Matt is a master tech for Fiat, Chrysler, and Alfa. What a combination, I said to him. He's been doing it since he was 18. He's 37 years old now. And I asked him, I said, Matt, why aren't you at a dealership? Because you're so smart and you're so good at what you do. You know, and here we go again, right? The association with Opus just gives you more of an education. He said, the problem is, Ron, he said, the dealer doesn't really want to pay for a guy like me. You know, it's. I went to all the classes. I became a master. I took all the seminars I had to take. And then slowly but surely, they figured out ways to give me less to do, make me less productive so they don't have to pay me as much. And it can be, you know, somewhere else. And, you know, you wonder, right? In a day and age of we're short technicians, we're looking for technicians. What's wrong with this industry? All right. Why is the mindset? And I asked him, I said, Matt, I said, you know, as you look back, you still talk to the guys at the dealership? And he said, yeah. He said, you know, I still have buddies there. And they all tell me the same thing, how drastically it is. There's a couple of older guys there that have been there since the 80s and the 90s. And you think about that, that's 30 and 40 years ago. So we're talking the old timers are there, as they are called and referred to. And I consider myself an old timer. You know, where's the room for the younger techs coming up? So we're pushing the younger techs out. I hate to, you know, clue the dealers in, but when the old timers or the older techs retire, you know, you've got to cultivate the talent pool. You've got to, where are the younger guys going to come from? Auto repair is a lot like baseball, I think, in that, you know, you've got to cultivate talent. You've got to, you know, learn when you have to swing the bat and go for the home run, and learn when you've got to, you know, take the short deal and try and solve the problem in a different manner than you might normally would. But it's not about not having technology. It's not about not having technicians. And it's not about some of the things that are going on that are going to hurt the industry long term. Opus is working for all of this, and I mean that sincerely. Listen, there are other scan tools out there. There are scan tools that, you know, it's there's other scan tools you're going to have as a technician. But I think the one thing, you know, if there's a king of the heap that just eliminates everybody else, right now I've got to say it's Opus IVS, what they're doing. The ability to flash software. We flashed 3 cars this week, 4 cars this week. That's almost one a day. And we're starting to see flash technology or flash requirement pick up every week now, where I envision the day where the independent shop will do 1 to 2 a day, 3 a day. It might just be, you know, it's all you're going to do is flash. And the issue is because it's all going to be software. And trust me, when electric cars get here, it's going to be all flash software technology to repair them. You know, that's how it's going to work, because it's either that or you're changing hardware as far as the components are concerned. So just, you know, more information out online. I believe it's opusivs.com is the website. Tom will research it for me and shoot me a note. But, you know, if you're a shop and you're struggling and you're finding that you don't have the ability to flash cars, or you're looking for that tech line connection with the knowledge firsthand of being live, with the ability to, you know, finish the repair by doing the flash, you got to look at an Opus IVS scan tool. It really is the cat's meow. You know, it really does the job and gets you there each and every time. 855-560. Oh, Tom, you want something? Are you trying to get in here?
Yes. You need to say hello to your biggest fan in Shenandoah, Iowa.
I have a fan in Iowa?
Yes. I was out in Shenandoah, Iowa this week, which, by the way, is the home of Phil and Don Everly from the Everly Brothers.
Sure.
And I was working at a radio station there, and the guy who takes care of the grounds and maintenance, his name is Tyrone. And he recognized my voice. And I was the big celebrity because I worked with the car doctor. He listens to you every week religiously.
Well,
had to have lunch with him and his daughter, his lovely daughter Sandy and his lovely daughter Tiffany. And, you know, it was just a good time.
Well, I'll tell you what.
Of course, we talked about you.
Well, of course. Who doesn't talk about me? That's really nice. And you know what? A big shout out to Tyrone and his whole family. We thank you for being car doctor aficionados out there that way. And we appreciate you taking such good care of Tom and sending him back. And because without Tom, I couldn't do this show. And without fans like you, this show wouldn't be worth doing. I'm Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor, 855-560-9900. I'm coming back right after this. Don't go away.
What's more fun than listening to Ron and Annie and the Car Doctor and getting that car fixed right? 855-560-9900. Give Ron a call. Now, back to Ron.
Hey, let's get over to Ron in Queens, New York, 21 BMW. Ron, welcome to the Car Doctor, sir. How can I help?
Hello, Ron?
Yes, sir.
Am I on?
Yes, sir, you're on.
Norman Cohn, I have a problem that I hope you can solve, and you're parallel to what BMW service in Bayside that I have complete confidence in.
Okay.
I have a 2021 BMW X1. The key fob will open the doors, but it will not start the car. You put the key fob next to the steering column, it will start the car. Notified BMW with the button on the ceiling. They gave me instructions to put the key fob against the steering wheel. Starts right up. Brought the car home last week. Same problem. Brought it into BMW Bayside. Very good people. Left the car there. They reprogrammed the car. Didn't work. Put a new IBM sensor in. Did not work. Now we're caught in that situation now where it's been reprogrammed, new sensor put in, new batteries in the fob put in. What do you think the next thing is going to be?
How many fobs do you have, Norman?
How many miles?
How many fobs?
Key fobs. We tried both of them out,
and they both do the same thing. So we know it's not the fob.
Yeah.
So it's the vehicle.
It's not the fob.
Right.
Okay, it's not the vehicle.
So it's not the fobs. It is the vehicle. All right.
Correct.
There is something in the vehicle, and they've got it updated to what they believe is the latest software.
That's right. That's the first thing they did, Ron.
Okay, and have they talked to BMW at the factory and asked for an answer?
That's what they're doing now.
Okay,
but you're parallel with what they're doing.
You're
on the right path.
Yeah, and where I think you're going to find is if there are no look, it's pretty clear cut to diagnose something like this. The first thing you're going to do is, you know, you're going to plug in a scan tool and look to see, is everybody talking? Are all the modules online? Is everybody communicating? This could be an issue where one particular module has incorrect hardware because they've done software. This could be a condition where they need to add something to this particular vehicle to make it do what it's supposed to do. My other thought is, are you the only one that's having this issue? Have they said they've seen this on other vehicles?
They said they haven't seen it in other vehicles. I downloaded it from the Neister this morning. There's no complaints about it. They haven't seen it at all, but you're giving me the same information that they gave me yesterday.
So
we're in a parallel path.
My question would be then, if there is a communication issue, I'm just wondering, you know, I don't care how new it is. Let's just diagnose it like any other car. If there's a communication issue between the fob, what is it not recognizing? Is the car not recognizing the fob? Does it not have the signal strength? Is there a problem with the antenna? Was something assembled incorrectly such that the antenna, wherever they've got it stuffed, the headliner, the footwell, somewhere in the body, is not mounted properly, and that's causing the lack of signal? Think of a radio antenna or a transmitter antenna from a radio station. Tom Ray will tell you if they're not mounted correctly, you're not going to get proper signal, and it's going to cause a problem just like you're describing. So it may have been something in the assembly of this car in that its antenna, its receivers are not mounted correctly so that it can't see signal.
Correct.
That would be my inclination where we're going with this. The problem is now the problem becomes it's a new car. It's a 21. They haven't seen this yet.
Have you ever heard about this? Have you encountered this before? That's what I'm calling it. Have you encountered
on older,
this in
on,
your
on older vehicles? Yeah, on older vehicles, so, and not just BMWs. I've seen it on Chrysler. I've seen it on Beamer. I've seen it on Jaguar, as they like to call it. And it's come down to either software or antenna location. Something wasn't mounted properly. All right.
Got it.
And mm-hmm. I think that's where you're going to end up. What they're probably going to do is they're going to receive instructions from BMW corporate or BMW tech line, and they may end up sending out, and you're within your right, you can ask for an engineer to come out and look at the car. They're doing that. Yeah.
I mean, they're sending out an electrical check, and they're giving me a loan of car. I couldn't say anything better about the BMW Bayside dealership. They're doing everything they can for me. But when I told them that I was calling, I listened to you, they chuckled. And I think everyone there listens to you. You're very famous, by the way.
Yeah, you know,
we have a great deal of respect for you.
Well, thank you. I appreciate being here. I'll tell you how famous I am, Norman. It kind of gave me a chuckle. I got a phone call this week, and I can do a shout-out to Bill from Newport News, Virginia. His daughter's Volvo broke down on the GW Bridge and overheated this week. And can I have it towed into you in New Jersey? I said, yeah, sure. You know, it's a car's a car, a job's a job. So she had it towed out by AAA. Madeline got there, very sweet and very nice young lady. And she told me, she says, I have to tell you, she says, my dad listens to you every weekend, Saturday, 2 o'clock, the live show. And then he starts playing the podcast. We don't see him until about 8 o'clock at night. But he was so excited that the car broke down and he got to talk to you and bring it to you. She said, you made his weekend. She said he was never so happy as to have a car break. I appreciate it. I can
date myself because when I was driving my father's 64 Volkswagen, it broke down. And I inherited that with 300,000 miles on it.
Right.
And we were still listening to you, and I was still driving it. Yeah. So you're a great person.
Well, thank
Keep
you.
Up the good work.
Hey, listen, can I ask you just to call us back and just let us know what fixes this car?
Yeah, that's what I was going to do. I want to keep you informed what's happening. I'll call your assistant and let him know what's happening. But I think you're on the same wavelength.
Absolutely. All right, sir.
I'll let you know.
Thank you, Norm.
Thank you.
You be well. Okay. You know, the issue becomes, we're going to have to accept with newer technology new kinds of problems, things that are strictly electronic related, and there's just going to be no getting away from it. The future of this business, as I talked about in the opening hour about Opus, is flashing. It's software. It's not nuts and bolts anymore. It's to some degree, but when you look at the amount of electronics that are in vehicles compared to what was there just 5 or 10 years ago, the percentage is increasing to the point where there's more electronics in the car now than mechanical in terms of repair possibility and potential and what's going to be needed. So flashing, you watch. Software is going to fix this car, or he's got something in the improper position. We'll wait to find out. I'm Ron Ananian and the Car Doctor. I'll be back right after this. Don't go away. The Car Doctor. Real quick, did you see the thing in the news this week about the Chevy Bolt, that it's catching fires? General Motors is telling owners of some older Chevrolet Bolts to park them outdoors and not charge them overnight because two of the electric cars caught fire after recall repairs were made. The company said Wednesday that the request covers 2017 through 2019. That's an older car, a 2017 through a 2019 Bolts that were part of a group that was recalled earlier due to fires in the batteries. Hey, that recall's really working. So the latest request comes after two Bolts had gotten recall repairs, caught fire, one in Vermont and the other in New Jersey, GM spokesman Kevin Kelly said. You know, and I love the sense of humor of our Car Doctor fans, right? We posted this up on Facebook. All right. Who's the guy that said, if you buy one, do you get the bag of marshmallows with it? I thought that was the, you know, come on now. That's not right.
Marshmallows?
Yeah.
Weenies, come on.
Yeah. Weenies, yeah, definitely. We want hot dogs with the car so we can. But, you know, this is a problem, right? And I'm not saying don't have electric cars. That's, but, you know, with every bit of technology, there's going to be a learning curve. And as I've said from the beginning, is 15 years too quick of a time frame? How will it happen? I've yet to talk to a tech, and this, you know, I have to make this comment. I have yet to talk to a tech in a dealership that sees what's going on in the dealership and the way it's structured. And, you know, they've got their stories. They, you know, they're the guys on the inside that believe in 15 years we're going to have electric vehicles at the same level or frequency of trouble-free conditions that we have now with current gasoline-powered cars, meaning there's going to be bigger issues involved. And personally, I don't think you, the public, are ready for it, but that's a social, that's a societal comment and question. So let's get on over to Eric in Virginia, 07 Prius, and see what's going on here. Eric, welcome to the Car Doctor, sir. How can I help?
Hey, thanks for having me, Ron.
Thank you.
Hey, so I have a problem that's been kind of bugging me a little bit. I have a check engine light on. I ran the code on it. It's a P0171, which is reading come back as lean on bank one.
Right.
And I'm kind of having trouble nailing it down. I mean, I've done some small things like cleaned out the mass airflow sensor, you know, throttle body while I was there. It's been a while, so I went ahead and changed out the spark plugs and the PCV valve. I haven't done any type of smoke test or anything like that, but I've kind of checked for vacuum leaks. Nothing really stood out to me. And just wanted to see what you suggest kind of going from there.
Does your scan tool read data stream, Eric?
No, it doesn't. It's okay. Just kind of a generic one.
Here's a good reason to go buy a better scan tool. All right. Go buy a scan tool that reads fuel trim. And, you know, you've got to see where we're at. What's the number? Remember in high school, did you take geometry or algebra in high school and they started showing you number lines with positive numbers and negative numbers?
Yep.
And you said to yourself, where in God's name am I going to use this? Right?
Absolutely.
I remember that day. And you know what? Here I am as a mechanic. In mechanical terms, what you're going to see on a scan tool is fuel trim, a balanced air fuel mixture on an OBD2 compliant vehicle starts at zero. That is a balanced air fuel mixture for that vehicle. You are going to see fuel trim in two forms. There's long-term fuel trim. There's short-term fuel trim. Long-term is history. All right. Short-term is current. Short-term is what you're having for breakfast right now today. Long-term is what you had for breakfast yesterday. The computer remembers that and makes calculations for that and compensates. The average car will turn on a check engine light when long and short-term fuel trims exceed somewhere between 25 and 35%, depends on which manufacturer we're talking about, all right? And you'll see it. You'll know when it's off after you get to look at fuel trims for a while. Fuel trims are like heart rate and blood pressure are to a doctor. They're the basics, man. Look at them on every car. Look at it every time you change the oil. You'll start to see things change and evolve as the car ages. But what you want to see is, where's fuel trim? Is it high at idle, or and then it smooths out and it comes down to normal, or is it high all the time? And while you're there, I want you to look at the downstream or the bank one sensor two O2 sensor. They use that sensor, they monitor that sensor to know what fuel trim is going to do or to control fuel trim. If you see that sensor down around 0.1 and it's stuck there, I want you to enrich it. I want you to add a little propane to it. Somehow we've got to feed it more fuel. Will that sensor come off at that 0.1, or is it stuck? Believe it or not, a stuck oxygen sensor on that particular car can cause a low fuel trim code. You know, or a lean fuel trim code. So, you know, listen, you're doing all the right things. You just need more tools. All right? You know, you're trying to play Major League Baseball with a stickball bat. It just don't work.
Absolutely.
All right? So,
well, can I ask a follow-up that may be kind of together? So I've also been having a little issue with the gas tank. I know that the Prius has the bladder system in it.
Yep.
And in general, I guess over the last couple of years, it hasn't been as bad. But I've only kind of been able to fill it up to about half capacity, so about 7-8 gallons. But now that it's been pretty hot down here over the last week or so, I've only been able to get a couple gallons, you know, 2-3 gallons in it before it shuts off. And I've even tried to baby it a little bit. And, you know, of course, I get the back overflow on it when I do that. Do you think that would be something that could possibly be connected, like a fuel filter or something that's clogged?
Only if you've got a fuel delivery issue such that it's affecting performance.
Okay.
All right. But, you know, where is fuel trim? Looking at, you know, numbers won't lie. Where's fuel trim? Where's the bank O2? Where's the downstream O2 at? And if you've got a bladder problem, as much as, you know, spending the money is a backbreaker, maybe it's time to, you know, replace that tank and deal with it, because it's only going to get worse in time. You know, those cars will, listen, those cars will go 300,000 miles on it. How many miles you got in that car, Eric?
220 right now.
Yeah. See, those cars will go 300,000-400,000 miles, and if you have to put a battery in it, you put a battery in it. Those cars are so over-engineered, it's amazing. You haven't done rear brakes on that car yet, have you?
Nope.
Have you done exhaust yet? Nope.
Nope.
Nope. All you do is you put front brakes on it. How many sets of front brakes have you put on it? One?
One. I got one when I first got it with about 70 or 80,000 miles.
Right.
And haven't touched them since.
Yeah.
And the only thing that I've had go on it, other than the headlight bulbs, which are pretty expensive, and then I had to do a wheel bearing on the front passenger side on it that it went out. But other than that, it's been pretty good to me.
Yeah, it hardly wears out tires, right?
Yeah, it's pretty good, as long as I get a good set.
Yeah,
I drive a lot for work, so sometimes I skimp a little on the tires. Just because I never seem to make a whole life out of them.
Listen, there's nothing like getting into a car with high mileage and having the confidence that it's going to get there. My advice would be fix the bladder problem, then dive into the fuel trim issue, because that car will give you years yet. You know, if you continue to take care of it like I suspect you are, that car will give you, you know, a couple of 2, 3, 4, 5 more years. It really depends how you take care of it. So, you know, it's going to be cheaper than a new car, I can tell you that.
Okay.
All right.
And then just the last thing.
Yeah.
What's your guess? I mean, do you think I'm leaning towards like an O2 sensor or something like that. Is that kind of where you think you might end up? I know it obviously depends on the fuel trim.
The most common failure on that, believe it or not, is really mass airflow sensors that are out of calibration. But you won't know that. You know, cleaning, it's a good step, but that's, you know, again, we're playing stickball in the major league. You know, where is fuel trim?
I didn't want to just start swapping parts.
No, and I don't want you to either. I want you to go buy a scan tool. All right?
You know,
for $500. You know what? Go to the Autel website. All right? Go to, you know, Google search Autel scan tools, AUTEL. Go to their website. And you can look at some of their DIY stuff. They've got things on there, $500 to $1,000. And you're going to have to spend that kind of money to get what you need. But you know what? You'll like that car. You're going to get a good couple of years out of it. Scan tools today are becoming, you know, it's a consumable. It's like your cell phone, right? We change our cell phones every 3 to 5 years. Some people change them every 2 years. You know, you can take an Autel, they'll update it, they'll keep you in software, and you should get 3 to 5 years out of that scan tool before you're ready for the next one. And what's going to drive you having to replace that is going to be the hardware requirement that the manufacturers impose on us. If you stay with that 07 Prius for a while, that Autel scan tool will work for a good long time. All right, kiddo?
Okay. All right, thank you very much for your help.
You're very welcome, Eric. Let us know what fixes that. And thank you for being part of the Car Doctor family. 855-560-9900. Ron and Amy, the Car Doctor, coming back right after this. Welcome back, Ron and Amy, the Car Doctor. Let's see if he's there. Is Ellison there in Virginia? We understand he might be on the line. Ellison turns 80 this week, and
I'm here.
There he is. How are you, brother?
Yeah. I got one that you probably don't even want to hear, but I've been owning cars since I was 16, and I'll be 80 next week, and I had the quickest fix I ever had in my life. I thought I had a problem. My old 87 Ford 350 I use around on the place because I don't drive anymore on the road.
Right.
But I thought I had a big problem. It was missing and skipping. I hadn't drove it for about a month and a half. And come to find out, a dirt dobber had made a nest on my, I call it the dash pipe, the slide outside the carpet. It won't land, the thing that took back in place.
Right.
And I took the dirt dobber next off, and I'm running fine.
Now, Ellison, let me ask you a question. You can't drive on the road anymore?
No, I'm legally blind.
Right, that's right. But you've got all these cars on the farm.
I got that macular degeneration.
Right. And you've got all these cars on the farm that you drive around in the fields.
Right, trucks. I got two trucks, and my son drives my cars.
Yeah, how many cars do you have now?
I have three.
Oh, you cut the they took some away from you, huh? The last time I talked to you,
I sold, so I got a pickup truck.
Yeah. The last time I talked to you, had 15 or 20.
I was getting ready to get my nephew to help me work on it on Sunday morning, and I come find I got to feel it around, and I said, "Let me feel around here and see what I can." And hit a dirt dob on this, and that was my problem.
Yeah, you know what? Animals in cars sure make some interesting stories, right?
Yeah, man.
What are you going to do for
you? Yeah, I thought I'd call you. I hadn't heard you in a long time, and glad to talk to you.
Always good to talk to you, Ellison. What are you going to do? Anything special for your birthday?
No, I'd lay back and stay off the road, having so many accidents and all around here. I like to lay back in my old lounge chair and just listen at the radio.
So let me see. You're going to be 80, so you were born
1941.
So right. What do you remember the end of World War II in 45 you were 4?
No, I don't remember that.
Right. But you saw a lot of you saw the country go through a lot of change, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely so.
The 40s, the 50s, the 60s, the 70s.
Right.
You're like a walking history book, Ellison.
Yeah. Look, I don't want to run with having a bad thunderstorm. I don't want to make the paper a bad thunderstorm.
No, I don't want you to get hurt. Listen, you go do what you got to do. You light up birthday candles. We don't want you to get lit up by the lightning. So,
yeah.
All right.
Okay,
you be well. Have a good birthday, Ellison. Happy birthday, brother.
Thank you.
You're very welcome.
Thank you much.
He's, you know how long I've been talking to Ellison? It goes back to, let me think, where,
Well, it's at least been since we took this show self-syndicated.
No, it's before that, Tom.
Wow.
Do you remember Ira from WOR?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
He was my call screener at OR. And, wow. Yeah, this is 20 years. And I remember when he first called up, he told us some funny stories. He had like, I think, 30 or 40 cars sprinkled around the cornfield. He lives on a farm in Virginia. And he's got all these cars, and he says, I'd have to stash them out in the weeds so my wife wouldn't find them because she wanted me to get rid of them. And he would go out there and, pretend he was, doing, gardening or, doing the farm work. And he would go take cars for a ride around the fields and here and there and everywhere. And he's just funny stuff. The guy loves cars. So we love Ellison. Great job, Ellison. Happy birthday. Congratulations on making 80. 855-560-9900. Ron and Amy, the Car Doctor, coming back right after this. Welcome back, Ron and Andy, the Car Doctor. Let's get over to Tom in Massachusetts. Tom, you're on. What's going on?
Hey, Tom. Ron. How are you?
Good, sir. What can I do? What can I do to help you?
I just wanted to see if it's possible to take a non-power hatch release and make it power if there's a retrofit kit or something.
What kind of car is this?
16 Kia Sedona minivan.
Do you know, was it ever offered as an option on the vehicle?
Some of them do have them, and it has the cutouts and whatnot for it.
Okay. So, there's a couple of thoughts I've got. Is it possible? Sure, we can do anything. They can put LS Chevy motors into 55 Chevys and make it look like their factory, so anything can be done. How much money do we have to spend, from a practical point of view? Electrically, to make the solenoids and the latches work, yes, I think that's a no-brainer, and it would probably involve, obviously the easiest way would be to find a donor vehicle, something that was in an accident where the back hatch is intact, and you could swap parts from that onto yours. It's also going to have different arms,
yep.
to support the hatch, because when you hit the button, you want the arms to be strong enough to push the hatch up. The rub is going to come from, does your vehicle or is your vehicle equipped electrically for the rear hatch, such that if the kit were installed, it would be a matter of a software install to get it to match up to allow it to function and work. So, yes, it could be done. You'd have to do some research as far as functionality. How do they make it work at the manufacturing level when they put it together? My feeling is it's there on the car. You just have to find the components and a donor vehicle. At what price? That I don't know. Appreciate the call, Tom. I'm Ron Ananey, the car doctor, saying it's time to go. We'll talk about the pink thing another time. Till the next time, remember, good mechanics aren't expensive. They're priceless. See ya.